Did you know that every time you swipe your debit card, those behind-the-scenes transaction fees make the big banks even richer? In 2016 alone, these fees added up to $60 billion. Yes, that's billion with a B. Well, what if there was a way to have the convenience of a debit card, but reroute those fees from the banksters to organizations actually doing good in the world? Organizations that protect the environment or feed hungry children? What if your swipes could literally change the world? Well, Groundswell SPC has found a way to do just that. We've designed a Visa debit card program that shares transaction fees with your favorite cause. Groundswell partners with nonprofit organizations that promote the card to their supporters. Their supporters then use the card to power the mission of the nonprofit. It's a win-win-win for everyone, except the big banks, of course. Groundswell is about to launch its first cards into market, and we're inviting you to be part of this movement as an investor in the company. Go to wefunder.com/groundswellcard to learn more. Set up a free WeFunder account and invest in Groundswell today and get your money on mission.
Some patience. All right, let's go ahead and I guess get started a little bit with this great rising. I am all over the place right now, looking at places to move and where are we going to live ultimately? Because at the end of the day, like, none of it really matters. Somebody was sending me pictures today of their farm in Wyoming. Miss Holly over there, who I think is on right now. And that looks beautiful. I was like, I've never even considered Wyoming. Does anybody else out there live in Wyoming? Because they seem to have all their freedom still. And the soil looks pretty fertile. I know, I've still been looking into the Ozarks, but there's been a little, who's this? Yep, Wyoming for fun freedom lovers. I'm really already to the point where nobody visits anyway. Like, everybody comes to Vegas. That was one of the things that we liked about coming to Nevada, because we go, you know, you're saying bye to all your friends in California, but everybody comes to Vegas at least once a year to spend a weekend. So it's like, if you really wanted to see these people or they wanted to see you, then they're going to make the time and the effort to come over and see you. And we do have, you know, those handful of friends that we'll still see once or twice a year, which is really nice. But then again, like, not to say forget you guys. I'm just like, everything in me is leaning towards just getting away from all of this, like everything. I used to think that I needed the bigger space to put up like family photos and, you know, oh, but if I want to put up this canvas here or this, like, how would I do that in tiny living type situations? Like, how would I have my things and my, and then I just started getting mad at my things. Like, I don't need the dumb things anymore. Like, none of it. I don't. I mean, my books are still important, you know? So then how would I do that? I'm not quite sure. And then there's that worry, too, that you're going to raise your kids up in these, like, tiny quarters, and they're going to yearn and want that, like, city life and that escape and to have the things, you know? So it's also in protecting them. I saw this great post from, I think a lot of you guys follow Dale Partridge. Great family. He's a pastor. And he was talking about how now more than ever, actually, let me just pull up the post and read to you guys what he wrote so you could make up your own. I hope his Instagram is not Dale Partridge. This Christian pastor, he had this post recently. I'm going to read what his caption said. So he says, "Our children will grow up in a world far more hostile than the one we did. We never had to concern ourselves with gender pronouns or the risk of pornography on our phones. We never had teachers who taught us to masturbate or openly called us to deny God and the Bible. No, today's children have a far greater battle than we ever did. As parents, we can't expect that coloring pictures of Noah's Ark on Sunday will suffice either. Our children need to be trained. A parent who sends their child out among today's wolves is grossly ignorant. Jesus strongly warns against such spiritual negligence in Matthew 18:6. But whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to stumble, it would be better for him to have a heavy millstone hung around his neck and to be drowned in the depths of the sea. God did not give children daycare centers or youth ministries or relatives or babysitters. He gave them parents. It is your responsibility to equip your child with not only the knowledge of faith that they claim, but the training they need to present it, discuss it, and defend it. Do you lead a daily Bible lesson in your home? Do your kids understand depravity and atonement and sin and redemption and prayer? The enemy isn't racist, sexist, intolerant, or prejudiced. He doesn't care about age or nationality or circumstances. He's always looking for an easy target. Make sure it's not your child." And that, like, really sat with me, because at first I'm just here thinking, oh my gosh, it's just all these distractions, you know, so how to get the kids just not as distracted. And yeah, I get that. I get that, you know, I'm a child of a pastor, and we only had, you know, we had Sunday school. We had the kind of Sunday school, though, that lasted, I feel like it lasted all Sunday. It was like, you get to church, you know, there's the 30 minutes before church that you're gathering, because we always had smaller churches. There's over an hour of lessons, and then there's an extra half hour of song, praise and worship. Many times we would go and sing. As you guys saw, I shared that video several weeks back of me. I think I was like 9 years old singing at the church. So you would sing, and it was a lot of that. And then afterwards there was lunch, and you know, you gathered with these people. And then we had weekly Bible studies at our home. My dad would host either a young adult Bible study, and there'd be another kind of Bible. But we were just constantly surrounded with like-minded, you know, people. And it was nice. So it wasn't just like 1 hour a week of church. And that's, so this guy is also not just saying to like forget the 1 hour a week thing of church, but it's like it's a daily training, and it's this daily lifestyle, and they are being inundated with all of this, you know, how could they not? It's not to downplay or talk smack about people who do send their kids to school, you know, because then I'd be a hypocrite. I'm here thinking, well, I only have, you know, a couple more years at max, because I've seen the curriculum for middle school is where I really get alarmed. But then now some people are sending me, you know, things from California, what they're teaching in like the grade school. I mean, in like first grade, second grade, and I'm going, this sucks. This is crap. And what they're saying is just completely okay for these kids. And not only that, but I do want to talk a little bit about how completely hypocritical, and I feel like everybody needs to sit back. And I shared a little bit of this on my allergies highlight, but you have these schools that have the nerve to give you these lists of things that you're not allowed to give your kids to take to school. Like if it's your kid's birthday, because of all the nut allergies, you can't just bring a tray of brownies into class because all the other kids and their problems. I thought it was just, okay, fine, you're not feeding other kids, that's no big deal, but what about your own kids? Well, our school, our kid's school had this list that was sent home, which I've read through it in that allergy highlight, of literally it had like everything on there. You guys saw that even citrus fruit, there's allergies to citrus fruit, there's allergies to strawberries, there's allergies to things like veal, beef, like all, everything was on there. Everything except for chicken nuggets, bottled water, and like, I don't know, some kind of cookie snack or something. It made no sense. And so I'm going, okay, well, the school then sounds like they really care. But then you look at the school's menu, and then you see that you send your kids for, like, the first day of school, and there's a blow pop on the desk, you know, or Starburst, like how Gracie was talking about how her son's first day of pre-K, the teacher gave all the kids Starburst. And then you look at the snack carts at these schools, and I'm looking at them going, because, you know, they're like, well, if you, your kid can have a hot lunch, this is what hot lunch looks like, which is pretty much GMO crap. Meanwhile, though, we have to be careful about what we're packing for our kids. Yet you look at the snack cart at the school and it's got Cheetos, Doritos, just all kinds of garbage. There's Skittles on there. There's M&Ms. And you're saying, this school doesn't give a shit. They don't care. None of that is real food. But your kids are going to this school where even if you're doing your 100% best in terms of what they're eating, look at who they're surrounded by all day long. Like you send your kids to the jungle and you have to be prepared for what they're going to come home with, what they're going to bring home, what they're going to be exposed to. And I get it. This isn't about, well, you can't shelter them from everything. I'm also not trying to have that conversation here. I get that you can't shelter your kids from everything because they're going to see it. They're going to see the real world. There is something to be said, though, for these Amish communities. Not that I'm telling you to go and become Amish, not that I'm going to go and become Amish, but it's fascinating to me that they've been around for hundreds and hundreds of years, and they literally don't have any of the technology and kind of advances that we have today in civilized society. Yet their boomerang ratio, meaning the kids that they do send off into modern society, it's like a 99% they come back. They come back, and they, so it says there's something to be said for that, that you grow up in nature, you grow up with the farm life, you grow up very with like simple needs. I mean, for us, it's like simple minds. For us, it's poverty, as you saw in my post yesterday. But for them, they see what we have, and they don't want any part of it. You know, it's kind of crazy that they come in, they see, okay, technology, look at the things there, look at all these people, look at the how easy it is to just like have a chilled drink. That's cool. Like you could pull a drink and you could throw ice in it, and how crazy, that's nice. That sounds awesome. But then they don't after that want anything to do with this society whatsoever, you know? I think that that's also why I had to point that out yesterday with that post, because we're defining poverty here all wrong. We have a lot of people that are living in this kind of culture that think that they are poor, but they have iPhones and they have, you know, they have heat when it's cold, they have air conditioning when it's hot, but they think that they're poor. Like in their mind, they're like, I am poor. And I guess that since there is no perfect, because this is not a perfect world and it's completely broken down, then the best that I can do is give my kids a certain set of skills at the very least, to where they're not going to fall back dependent on this kind of world. Because this stuff, it can be alarming and it can really take up a lot of your day. The more you look into it, the more you go down some of these rabbit holes and you're like, oh my gosh, Antarctica, really? But the more you go down this stuff. And I just found that fascinating, right? Side note, like, yeah, we can't live there. Nobody can live there. It's not habitable. It's inhabitable. But these people, this big family that's worth $500 trillion, they get an island. Like, they get an island. You're not allowed to live there, though, because you can't live there. And I think that that upsets free-thinking individuals. Not so much that I want to live in Antarctica tomorrow, but it's like, I don't like people telling me that I can't live somewhere. That's all that is. So anyway, Wyoming's looking pretty nice. And I just, it's not that I don't care about my friends or people that, it just, it's not important to me right now. What's more important to me is learning how to fend for myself, build a chicken coop. I don't like that the area that I'm in right now, I can't have chickens. You know, when you're in anything that's like an HOA type community, you think you have these luxuries, you think that you have this security, and it is a false sense of security, because when houses in these kind of communities get robbed and mugged, they're not getting robbed and mugged, they're getting robbed and mugged by the people that actually, wait, I take that back, because there was an instance where the people who were doing the robbing actually lived in the community. And that they had found, like, but that they were doing hardcore stuff. Like, it wasn't just drugs. It was like they were stealing these. It was like a chop shop that they had, like, on our same block here. And you're talking double guard gated community. like they were stealing like Lamborghinis. It was like that. But the rest are the people that don't live here. Like the poor that we've dubbed poor, they don't go. Like, they're coming into the nicer neighborhoods to go robbing the nicer neighborhoods, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Not that this neighborhood is that nice to begin with. I mean, it's okay. But it bothers me. It bothers me that, like, I have neighbors that want to call the HOA and get involved when I'm having, like, dirt delivered to my house, you know? It kills me. But they say, oh, the HOA is just to maintain, it's to make sure that everything is like, you know, that your neighbor can't paint their house pink and then the property value drops and you're going, obviously that would be crappy if I had a neighbor that wanted to just have a clown house, but the way to avoid that to begin with would be to just have my own space, our own space. We're just, everybody leaves us alone. So there's a lot of that going on in my life right now, if for those that have been asking. And also, here's what bothers me. I did a post months ago on, you know, it triggered a lot of people, as like half my posts seem to trigger people. And I feel like it's stupid, because for me, when somebody puts up a post that makes me question my life and what I'm doing, my defense is to immediately, like, my initial reaction is to accept what is happening in my life and why that post is making me feel that way and not attack the author. But anyway, it was something of the sort where it said, you know, don't tell yourself you can't homeschool. Don't tell yourself you can't, like, just tell yourself you're not going to poison your kids. Do not comply. It was something of that nature. And you had these moms that were quote unquote woke moms that jumped on there and were like, what needs to happen is all these moms who have the luxury of homeschooling need to start taking in all of our kids and teaching our kids too so we can continue to work. And I'm going, no, bitch. Are you kidding me? Absolutely not. You're not welcome. Because what I'm realizing is it's the same mentality. It's the same mindset of somebody needs to do this for me. It's a really entitled type of mindset. Like, yeah, that would be nice for other people to take on the burden of raising and schooling your children. First of all, you call it a luxury. It's not a luxury. There are some people who are homeschooling their kids that are living luxuriously. It's a very tiny percentage, very tiny, but trust that they worked really hard to get to where they are. And it is not their job and on them to now take in your rugrats. It's just not. Like, she wasn't getting the point entirely. And I'm going, excuse me? So you're saying that if I get to a point where I can homeschool my children, the ones that came from my body, my you-know-what, that I now am obligated to homeschool your kids in the community because you're an anti-vaxxer too and you're also like, your kids can't go to school. So what? So that you can continue to work your 8 to 5 and pay for your what? Your Netflix subscription, your Amazon Prime bullshit that you're getting, like, that's what you're saying to me? You're either going to have to offer money to somebody, like, there needs to be some kind of mentality here because you're not allowed and welcome on the commune if you think this way. You're the very reason we're in this mess to begin with, that mindset of government. Can somebody do this part for me, though? Because I don't want to do this part. I don't want to do any of this shit. Can I just say, sorry that I have to throw some cuss words out here, okay? Can I just say, I don't want to do any of this. I also, like you, with my petty mindset, would rather just sit home and, like, watch Lifetime movies, Judge Judy, whatever my mom got to do on a day where she was bored, and not have to do any of this extra stuff. But look at where it got us. That kind of thought process and thinking got us to where we're at right now, which is a generation of children who don't know what to do. And I'm talking about us. We're the children who don't know what to do. We're the children who don't understand the very basics of being self-sufficient. That is why we are in this mess to begin with. So if you think, and you're woke on here, and you think for 2 seconds, that, no, it's okay because I'm woke to the poison that is vaccines, and what I got to do now is I got to find a community of people that I can, like, congregate with, and we're all going to help each other. There is key to that in we're all going to help each other. You see, I'm not ready to go into a commune-type lifestyle right now because I got shit to offer other people. I do. I can only talk so much. What's a woke person that knows how to man a farm going to do with my shit? They're going to be like, shut up all day long. Please, what can you do? What can you offer? So I got to now put myself in a position where I can offer up something to the community. And my husband and I are realizing we don't really have that much to offer in terms of survival to a community. So what are we doing right now? Well, we're learning. We're spending our free time learning, trying to figure out trades and what else can we do? What else, like, because we're not going to go into a place and expect for free. We want to be actually away from the people that expect things for free. Yes, the government's effed. Yes, society's effed. Yes, it's like not really your fault. It's none of our fault that we're in this mess right now, okay, because we're in this mess. But you recognize you're in the mess, right? And then you ask yourself, am I going to be that whiny-ass person in the movie that everybody, when they're sitting back in the movie theater, can't wait for that person to just die? Like, you know, you guys know what I'm talking about, right? But then you got to ask yourself, crap, am I that person? Like, would I be that person whining, complaining, and bitching the entire time while everybody else is trying to survive? Because kill me now. You don't want to be the person in the movie that the audience is hoping just kicks the bucket. You don't. And if you think you might be in a situation like that, that means you just got some work to do. That's all. You have to recognize it. So that's where I'm at right now. I'm like, I got to learn. Actually, this book is a really great book. I feel like I'm a whole new person when I'm reading this book. Have you guys? It's called Self-Sufficiency for the 21st Century. I absolutely love it. It's literally how to do almost everything. It's not just in gardening. I'm just going to, like, go over some quick stuff on here because I want you, like, you're going to have to go and get it, okay? Besides community gardening, building raised beds, planting different hanging baskets, how to construct homes for wildlife, making a greenhouse. Like, there's an entire thing, like, building a cold frame. I don't even know, honestly, understand what the heck that is. Hoop housing, growing undercover, setting up irrigation. Like, it's literally everything, crop rotation. And I just want to, like, know this. I want to know this, memorize it. And so that's why I'm taking those steps right now, because I'm also not ready to just go into a land and then ruin it and make it all wrong. Like, I can't do that. I'm here thinking, like, I just got to find fertile land. And I just got to take these seeds and throw them in the ground and then voila, like, wait a little bit and stuff will happen and I'll be able to feed my family. Like, that's actually not how it works at all. But it's got, like, all these tips on recycling. It's fascinating. And it's really, a lot of the stuff, too, it's very basic common sense type of stuff. So there's, like, rainwater harvesting systems, pumping from wells and springs. It's understanding water, understanding how to conserve water, building a water wheel if you have to. Little things like, look, if you're going to grow all this lettuce, right, then here are ways to grow this lettuce so that all these critters don't get in this lettuce. But you're always going to want to keep a little bit of the lettuce off to the side, because what's going to happen is, like, caterpillars are going to go on that lettuce. And you're going to welcome the caterpillars, because you're going to want to take those caterpillars that are on these beds of lettuce and you're going to feed them to your chickens. Like, it's things like this that I'm learning. Or, you know how you're learning that poison ivy, everywhere in the world where poison ivy is planted, there's another plant that's planted alongside the poison ivy that you're apparently, if you get messed with the poison ivy, you're supposed to take that plant and rub it on, and then the itching would stop. It's almost like this beautiful, incredible design. And it's like, I don't even know who I am, first of all. This is, like, not the person that I was not even 6 months ago. I'm becoming a different person. Okay, yeah, it's called Self-Sufficiency for the 21st Century by Dick and James Trowbridge. See how petty I am? You see how, like, dumb I am? Anyways, working with willow, like, how to make baskets, how to make bread, boosting your immune system through syrups, how to make salads. Like, what to do with it, just how to make cider. There's even a chapter on here on how to make wine if you want to make wine, how to brew beer if you want to do that. Making an earth oven, making a cold smoker, smoking your own food, like how to cure meat and fish. Just, I'm looking through, honestly, the first 5 pages of this book that were so confusing to me as just, like, a person living in this modern age. And I'm going, I would be kicked off the farm. Like, they're going to kick me off the farm. I'm going to be useless. So what I'm going to do with my time now is I'm going to learn how to not be useless. I'm going to learn how to not be completely useless, because the sick and sad thing about what's happening today, and that's why they call it modern-day slavery of the human farm that we're all in, is that, and this is why depopulation is such a big deal, they've literally replaced you and what human beings can do with machines. You are of zero value to this technology age. You're just a user. You're a consumer. You are walking around doing nothing that benefits anybody but yourself. So you are easily disposable. Easily. And then you're going to take careers and jobs that are literally, at the end of the day, like, what? How do we have this many people that want a career in something like gender studies, what is that going to do and contribute to the planet and to human beings? Like, what can you do with that degree? You can go and teach a class, I guess, on gender studies and continue to confuse the population so much more that we are distracted and have no idea how to do the very basics, okay? I'm just saying, okay? I met a mom months ago who her kids were like 9 and something, and like they didn't even know how to tie their own shoes. And she's like, why do they need to know how to tie their own shoes? We have Velcro. And I was like, so you just never bought them shoes with ties on them? She's like, no, we've got like Velcro shoes or like slippers. And I'm like, so they don't even know how, like, I'm just saying not for shoes, but like, do they know how to tie a knot? Like, would they know how to tie a proper knot? And she was like, why would they need to know how to do that? Like, she was mad at me for even asking her. And I was like, oh my God, oh my God. So this is why we love these survivor type shows. My kids are learning some crazy stuff on there. I mean, and we love it. Like, first of all, I'll say this once so that you, if you need to rewatch it or whatever. Okay. Primal Survivor is a really, where is that one? Is that Hulu? Primal Survivor? Or is that Amazon Prime? I think that one's Hulu. Primal Survivor is a good one. There's I Shouldn't Be Alive, which is Amazon Prime. That's a really good one because it's true stories on what happened to people that didn't think they were going to be in something like a plane wreck and survive, or like the helicopter went down. Now they find themselves in the middle of like the Arctic Circle and they're like, what do we do? A lot of it. It's fascinating stuff to me. There's another one called Dude, You're Screwed, which we love because it's about these, like, one's a Navy SEAL, one's a Green Beret, and what they do, they literally drop each other off into the survivalists, and some of them are like hunter-gatherer types, and it makes you question a lot of stuff. Like, guys should watch this, like every guy, because at the end of every episode, you got guys questioning, like, would I be able to do this? Would I know how to survive? My kids are watching these shows, and they're literally piecing all this together. Like, my son, I was going down the staircase, and he's like, hey, Mom, you know those plants on the staircase? I'm like, well, oh, yeah, these. They're called snake plants or mother-in-law's tongue, which I find really funny that it's either one or the other. Like, anyway. He goes, did you know that if we ran out of water, we could dig those out, and those kind of plants, they store water in their little bulbs, like my six-year-old, you know? And I'm going, what? Well, yeah, they really retain water pretty well. That's why I like those plants, because you hardly have to do anything with them. You could literally leave them, and they just kind of thrive. They actually do better when they're left alone, which is the opposite of your mother-in-law, isn't it? But anyway, I digress. So I'm saying that they're picking up all of these great little survival skills. And then this is another one that somebody referred to me to get. It's called The Lost Art of Reading Nature's Signs. And there's not too much illustration in this book. Bear Grylls, I love that they reference Bear Grylls in here because he has one called Survival Academy. So there's a show also called Survival Academy where they take these kids from the UK that are so dependent on, like, their phones, and they throw them into the wild for, like, 2 weeks to really just show them what life is like out there. And then you get bothered by the children that are depending on everybody else to do stuff, and you're going, kid, don't be like that person. But sometimes you got to tell that to yourself, too, like, I don't want to be like that person. So this book is great, and I'm having my kids read through this as well. Like, Amelia is going to be starting this one. She's working on a lot of other stuff right now. Besides the fact that she does these vaccine studies, she also has like an oil book. So she's learning about the different kind of oils and what they do and why. And it's great. It's really great that they can now go out and see this kind of stuff. So I feel like I need to move and be somewhere where they can get this kind of childhood. And I don't think I'm going to have it in a place like this because as much as I love the desert and I do like desert living, there's just a lot of stuff you can't grow in the desert. I mean, unless you're Israeli, because for whatever reason, Jerusalem, things just thrive, you know. My dad, when he goes there, he's just like, it's fascinating that you literally see the border wall, and on the other side is, like, Palestine. And their desert is desert. There's nothing that can grow there. It's, like, terrible land. But then just on the side of the fence that's not their land are, like, thriving banana trees. And so part of me is also thinking there are a lot of ways that you can grow in the desert, and we've been lied to on that as well, but I don't know. Maybe it's just more desert food that I'm not a fan of, you know? I want to be somewhere where I actually eat all that kind of stuff. Like, I would like Florida, except Florida sucks right now in terms of religious freedoms and medical, like, Florida kind of sucks. Besides the fact that they also have no income tax, but, like, you could grow some of my favorites in Florida, like mangoes, calamansi, like, they're growing a lot of tropical stuff that I love, because that's kind of where I'm from. I'm from the Philippines, so that food is more, like, the kind of food that I want, you know? But then they suck with everything else. So anyways, this is a good book, too, and there was another one. It was, like, 100 Deadly Skills, which we got recently, that I think you guys, especially if you have little boys, would love that book. Just teaching you, like, all these kind of tricks on if you're in a situation, like, who's there with a big mango tree? Pass on Florida. But wait, Cassandra is in Florida. Are you homeschooling, though? And then talks in Fremont. Oh, hey, Karma. There's ways to grow in the desert. I volunteered at a garden in Phoenix. Yeah, I'm seeing that a lot of people are really growing in the desert. I just, in the community I'm in right now, I can't. I have these raised garden boxes and, you know. But you know what actually is more appealing right now that I never thought that I would say? Being far away and being in a place where nobody really wants to be, that's more appealing now. Whereas before, literally this time last year, I was like, I don't want to live anywhere that nobody wants to come visit. But now that I know what's out there and, like, the people that are out there and what the people want and what the average, like, zombie wants and craves, I literally want the opposite. I'm going, I want to go where you will not only never find me, but never even want to go to visit me. That would be amazing. And so that's kind of what I'm, like, drawn towards now. Because you notice that these places that are considered paradise in the world, right? Like, these places that are by the beach and by, like, the places are beautiful. But the people there, and this is obviously not applies to everybody because there's woke people, but the people that gravitate towards that need that beauty in nature, are, like, some of the ugliest people inside. They have zero depth and zero anything to contribute about them, that they are drawn towards beautiful places like that. Because they themselves, anyway, you guys kind of get where I'm going with that. And I just feel like happiness is never in your happenings, and, you know, it's never going to be found in a place, right? It's all in, I guess you have to sit back and, like, really write some of your needs and wants out of this life. And I just don't think that I'm going to have that in those kind of places with my kids. That's all. You know, I'm a waitress in Huntington Beach. I see ugliness every day. I just don't want any part of it. I don't want to be a part of, like, the moms and those groups that they are so superficial. Like, it's flooring to me. It's like all the things I used to want and think that I needed, and I want just nothing to do with it. Nothing to do with it. So you caught me in this funky time in my life right now. It's a very transitional time of my life, and I almost, like, it kills me every day that I have to send the kids off to a school, even though, you know, seems to be a really great school, and they do come back learning some stuff. But I'll tell you this much, if you think that they're not pushing agendas at the younger ages, you're completely wrong. They're pushing the white privilege agenda And do I believe that white privilege exists? Yeah, but I believe that there's privilege in every color. I believe that there's brown privilege for sure, because I know that had I just not gotten my citizenship, had I just rode that train of, like, the dreamers, I probably could have gotten free education, even though it's shit education. But my daughter, case in point, like, in first grade, she comes home around January, because that's, like, Martin Luther King Jr. month, right? That's, like, his birthday, so that's when they celebrate all that. And you're trying to go, oh, my gosh, when am I going to have a conversation with you about, like, who actually killed Martin Luther King? But let's save that for a rainy day. What did you learn, kid? And she's like, well, this is my daughter, okay? My daughter, who is Puerto Rican, Taiwanese, Spanish, and Filipino. And she's going, we learned that, like, a lot of white people are really bad and really racist. And I was like, pump the brakes. What? What did you learn in first grade? She's like, we just learned about, like, all the white people that were really racist and terrible towards the black people. And I'm like, is that like, word for word what your teacher said? She's going, yeah. And then she said that kind of racism in white people still exists today. And that there's, and I'm going, did she tell you, though, that there are racist black people? Did she tell you that there are racist Asians? That there's racist everything and everyone? No. And I was like, So my daughter came home from school thinking white people are just more racist than everybody else. That, to me, I feel, and that I'm telling you, that's first grade. So that was pretty much this teacher's opinion. And I'm going, how am I trying to raise a woke kid here? And she's going to be walking around soon thinking white people bad. I don't want that either. A racist, a true racist, will expose themselves for being racist. And I think it's better to teach your children how to catch those cues. Oh, you hear a person talking in this way, and it doesn't even matter at that point. You need to start recognizing what true racism sounds like, and if you're just going to now start. So anyway, that's 6 years old, right? That's at 6 years old. I'm not about to raise my kids to just think that all white people are bad. That's not ever not going to happen, not on my watch. But if that's already the education that they're getting at first grade level, I'm like, I'm in trouble, because I can't be debating and having arguments with my kids all day long here, because what else are the schools teaching their kids? They're teaching your kids Common Core, and Common Core, as we know, is garbage mathematics, right? So if the parents are struggling to learn Common Core, the kids are interpreting that as, my mom is an idiot. My mom doesn't even understand first grade math, second grade math. No, your mom doesn't understand garbage math that wants to tell you that if you put in 5 minutes into an equation that should take 5 seconds and you come up with the wrong answer, but your teacher marks it right because you tried your best, that's the kind of math your mom doesn't understand. And I don't want to understand that kind of math, because you literally have these people that they gather up all of us as parents, and they will tell you to your face, if the child shows that 3 times 4 equals 11, but they took the time to come up with that answer, we're going to mark it right. You're going, and what bank is going to just, can I Common Core my bank account right now and just get rounded up? Is that possible? In what world? But this is literally what they will tell you to your face. It has to do with the No Child Left Behind, the Every Student Succeeds. If you haven't looked into the lie that is those two set up programs, then please look into that when you get the chance. Okay, it wasn't just all Obama's fault. A lot of that was Bush's fault too. But those kind of programs are dumbing down our children, and they're not only dumbing down our kids. The design in that is that the kids also think you as a parent are an idiot. So they're easily now going to gravitate towards the government to educate them. Do you understand? For those that are like, that this is kind of new, first of all, if you're new, welcome here. I mean, I don't know how you lasted this long on the live. But it's things like that. It's these basics. It's these concepts that I just want my children to, I want them to at least recognize, you know? I'm not going to control their destiny. They're going to control their destiny. And if at the end of the day I move them off to some farmland and they get all of these skills and all of these talents in that, you know, that I think every human being, the more I'm reading these books, the more I'm going, oh, my gosh, they took all of that away from us. You know, it's basic stuff. I'm going, well, then what do you do when it's dark? Like, how do people live without electricity? What do they do when it's dark? And these people are like, you go to sleep. Like, you go to sleep because actually it is natural and it is in God's perfect design that we wake up with the sunrise and experience that and what that does for our bodies if you wake up with the sunrise. But now if you're the person that wakes up with the sunrise, society and culture views you as crazy and probably poor because you have to work on a farm. You're getting up with the sun. But that's kind of like how we were wired and what is best for us, you know? The kind of ailments that go down when you get a good night's sleep, go figure. It's just a lot of this, like, go figure type of stuff. Now, am I ready to do it? No. Just for now, I'm going to be saying something completely opposite a year from now. I'm probably going to be, like, not even on here, just like, bye, I'm living my life. But right now, we're, like, hybrid. Let's hybrid this because I don't necessarily want to live in, like, the hut by the river. But I want to know that if I had to live in that hut by the river, I'd kind of more or less know what to do. That's kind of where I'm at. And then I got to start now picking out, like, what is my look going to be? Like, if the end of the world just happened today and you only had one outfit, just that's it. What would that outfit be? And it gets you thinking. That's all. That's where I'm at. You want your kids to be healthy, independent, filled with integrity. Yes. I love what you're saying there, Claudia. But can this kind of society and can the places we're sending them to daily offer them that? Nope. It can't offer them any of that. So what I'm struggling with right now is that I like and need all of this crap that I don't need and I shouldn't like. That's where I'm at. Are you doing a Q&A? I don't know. Should I do a Q&A? Not now, but I need to go change my outfit just in case. Waldorf school's off of that. So I'm really looking into a lot of these, like, survival courses. There's places and academies in, like, Maine where I don't really recommend living in Maine because I just don't agree with a lot of their laws. Sorry if you're from Maine. But I've looked into Maine a little bit, and it's not going to be first option choice here. But there's schools and places where, like, you could send your kid to, and in 3 weeks they'll be taught how to build a house from, like, the ground up. I think things like that, trades like that, skills like that are – you can't even put a price on it. You can't put a price on what these people are doing in the wild and how they're living and surviving. You really cannot. They're the ones that are going to survive if the shit hits the fan. Sorry. They're the ones that are going to seriously survive and outlive all of us. Because to them, it's just going to be another day. It's going to be like, oh, well, yesterday was kind of terrible because, like, we're now living in, you know, in an Iceland. But I guess we'll just keep going. That's their attitude versus the rest of us that are going to be like, I don't know what to feed my kids tonight because I don't cook. And yeah, anyway. So distractions aside, that's kind of where I'm at for those that want to know. I did that talk and whatever the other day and they're like, oh, so does that mean that you're not doing, that you're no longer doing the insurance thing, and no, that's not it at all. I feel like I addressed a little bit of that. I still do those meetings just a few times a month, but it's literally when people message me and they're really interested in it, and I'll do like a pre-screening and I won't waste the time versus what I was doing before where I was like getting into my car and doing like the 10 meetings a week, and I don't want to do that anymore. For me, I'm like, And I'm even bad, not that I'm bad at it, but I literally, for the company, they're like, you're useless, because I can't sell somebody on something that I know they don't need. Like, I'm not going to sell somebody on a policy that's going to cost them, just, it makes no sense for their life. So that's what I mean by I'm bad at it. How I even got into it in the first place is because I, like, argued on it, because when my husband had lost his job years ago, I found out that we were not protected, but the entire time I thought we were, and then it bothered me that I had no idea how to even file a claim. Then it went down the rabbit hole of, it's all by design because we have $7 billion in unclaimed insurance floating around, and here I am going, well, that sucks. That's messed up for these people to not allow, you know, to not tell others that they have money owed to them. And then I found out, by the law, they're not required to tell you. It's not their job to tell you that you have money that was owed to you by a dead relative. And that dead relative just happened to not do their job right and put it in the right places so that you could find it. That's, like, your fault. That's not their fault. It's stupid, and I agree, but that's why I got all, like, hoity-toity pissed and mad about that. And then I just started researching it, and I was kind of then offered, like, a job because I got, like, really upset with the same, like, unions and stuff out here in Vegas that conduct them. And it was like, well, you should do this. You'd be good at this. That's kind of how that fell into my lap. And then also that it was a job that I can work for myself and make my own hours. And those kind of jobs always, like, appealed to me, obviously, you know. Because before photography, like, the wedding photography thing took up about 10 years of my life. I still do it. I'm only taking, like, under 10 weddings a year now, which is amazing, going from, like, 40 weddings a year, living in California, where half that work was just to live in California. So stupid. So I still do it. I just don't really advertise for it. But before that, what did I do? I waitress. That makes perfect sense, doesn't it? Because depending on my mood and depending on how I carried myself for the day, I could make more money or not. Like, if I was in a crappy mood, I didn't make as much money that shift, and it showed. But if I was like, I'm going to just put on a face, have the best night of my life, I'm going to walk with cash, a lot of cash. And that always, like, I love that, you know. I'm not ragging on it. I just can't do it. If you're like, that's the kind of job for me, you need that stability, the 9-to-5, where your paycheck always looks the same, whether you work hard or not, then that's cool. That's totally up to you. Why I would not survive in a job like that is because if I'm working hard and the person next to me isn't, I'm going to be like, I'm just going to be that person. I don't know why. But I feel like human beings are about that. Like, we're about this fairness type of thing. Somebody cuts in front of you in line and you've been waiting for an hour, you're pissed, right? Or are you just like, no, it's cool, just, you got to carry on with your day and do whatever you wanted to do and just come here right in front of me. Go for it. You know, no, I feel like no. So since I know myself and it's all about knowing yourself, I don't like that other people can come in and just expect, then I don't want to be that person that comes into a situation and just expects stuff. Okay, that's it. If everything hits the fan and I make it and survive and end up on a farm with Jeff and the kids, we're going to have to, like, labor there. I'm going to be like, okay, what can we do then so that we can partake in, like, the food you guys are serving here? What can we do? That has to be, I think that has to be the way we compose ourselves, you know, in order to survive. You don't just end up in, like, a spot or a place and you're like, okay, what can you guys do for me? They're going to be like, we're going to wait till you go to sleep and we're going to kill you. We're just going to kill you because you're going to take us all down. So I don't want to be that person. And then I feel like I'm a broken record right now. Although I am going to go and look a little bit more into Wyoming. Actually, I feel like, I don't know if Jed's on. Hey, Jed. Jed, are you still around? Because I can jump off this live right now and we could do the talk on, like, the climate change stuff. I feel like we'll go that way. Oh, you're there. Okay. So I'm going to jump off this live, and I'm going to set up the next one with Jed for our little talk. And then we can discuss a couple other things that are happening, like with the Amazon and all that. So reading some of these comments, the kind of attitude Californians take when they leave California. That's exactly it. And that's why people are so over it, you know. I didn't want to be the Californian that comes to Nevada and turns Nevada into what I left and didn't want any part of. I don't understand. But there's people that come and do that here. And they're thinking like, yay, we got away from California. And then they're electing and voting in the same trash, the same stuff that's going to turn this place into what they didn't want to be a part of. You know, it's crazy. And that's what a lot of people are doing in Texas. So I know a lot of like Texans that are getting pissed. Like, please, you're coming into Texas and you are you kidding me? Ultimately, you guys, it's going to be about this whole survival thing. It is really going to be about weeding out the rest, like letting the rest kind of dig their own, you know what, and you just get your stuff in order. You know, that's how it's going to have to be. I don't want to be in a place and then build up a fence and you get this straggler that's like, walls are bad, fences are bad. Because what? Because they keep freeloading individuals that are not giving anything to society a chance to come in and ruin everything? Really? The homeless people problem is definitely a leadership government problem. And they are gravitating toward, they're so used to a system that just feeds them and shelters them. That they are like, I need to continue to live here. Like, you don't need to be homeless and live in San Francisco. I don't know how to tell. I feel like when I'm going down the street, I'm going, I mean, if you've saved up enough money for the meth and if you've saved up enough money for the booze, you could buy yourself a one-way ticket Greyhound out of here, you know, where you don't have to live in San Francisco in the, like, freezing temperatures in the month of June. Just to live in San Francisco, California. You could live almost anywhere else. It's so sad. And I don't want to go down that road because that would be just a whole other conversation. But it's this mindset. You know what? It's almost like, are you really getting away from a place? Or are you getting away from a mindset? That I feel like that closes in and puts kind of like a finished loop on all of this, because that's exactly what I'm trying to get away from, is more of a mindset. And if I can contribute anything to this world right now, it is children that grow up into adults that don't think this way, that don't have this mentality, this entitled mentality. That's where I'm at there. Anyway, all right, Jed, I'm going to jump off this and then I'm going to jump on again so we could do another talk. Okay, we'll try this again in like 5 minutes. Bye, guys. I better do. Oh, shit. You have to stop the recording. Yeah, you can get to my girl. Okay. We'll stop that recording, and this one, let's go to a commercial break right now, you guys.
Are you looking for a new place to shop, eat, and save? Are you sick of paying full price? Would you like to save money at the places you enjoy most? Well, here's a popular savings book that is full of coupons catered to your local area. It's called Save Around. This book is full of exclusive discounts to help you save money around your town. Yes, that's Save Around. You will save money at restaurants, department stores, cars, even flowers. When I take my family out, there are 7 of us. The average meal was about $110 to $140. Last time I took them out, and I'm holding a copy of the receipt right here, the check originally was $120. With the Save Around book, our meal cost $82. $22 at a place we go to quite often. Who knew? And there are a few places we found that we are going to check out. View the books in your area before you buy. Go to freedomizerradio.com or barefootislegal.org. Just click on your city, and within a few days, you will be saving money around town with your new Save Around book.
Has the right to get into all that stuff. You're giving them the right to using, like, to having camera access on your phone. So I think some of you sent me that, and I just feel like I've seen that same kind of post with Facebook in the past, so I don't even know how. But they already have that right, exactly. They already have the right to do all of that. So just waiting for Jed, whenever you're ready. So there we go. By signing up, you opt in. Yeah, exactly. So let's go live here. So it's almost like we should be grateful. We should be grateful that they're letting us, you know, use their platforms to alert the masses. Hey, Jed.
Hey.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. What did you catch? You caught some of that other live. Sorry, I was like, didn't realize that you were on. You could have probably started this sooner, but that's okay. I do want to really quick just mention, because it's been posted and it's happening in California, that their San Diego County is recording now the second case of measles this year. So, and it says, this is from ABC 10 News. The county's second case of measles this year has been reported. This is what they announced just on Tuesday, so just yesterday. The person was fully immunized. He came into contact with an 11-month-old San Diego resident who contracted the disease after a recent trip to the Philippines. There's quite a few things with that, because I'm going, first of all, please stop calling it immunized. Stop using the word immunization, because if somebody still catches the disease, that means that they had no immunity. So what exactly, when you're vaccinating, are you gaining immunity to or from if your vaccines don't work? And also, I love how they were able to figure out exactly where, like, this just happened yesterday. I'm so blown away how they could figure out exactly where that person who was fully immunized contracted the measles from an 11-month-old baby, right? They can tell you that, but they can't pinpoint how a baby that gets shot up with 8 vaccines in one day and then suddenly stops breathing and dies, to them, that's an unsolved mystery. They're going, oh, my gosh, we're going to call this just a sudden death? Like, what? We don't know. We don't know. And of course, this is all happening just in time for these votes, right? Because they're going to throw this your way. I mean, I'm like, geez, is Lorena posting about this one measles thing? Because that's like in her county, that's in her district. And anyway, if she does post anything about it, you guys, and you follow her on Twitter, you're following her on any of these spots, just hashtag norovirus. Just hashtag norovirus to her, please. Oh, I hear Ellie back there.
Yeah, she's going to be with us today.
Awesome. Okay, so anyways, sorry, I just had to point that out. Of course, the survivor is not going to come out into the open. I don't know, maybe out of sheer embarrassment. Maybe they're embarrassed because they've been fully immunized and they still caught the measles, and that sucks. But I feel like this is, you know, those in charge think that these kind of stories are helping their case for force mandating this stuff. It's not helping their case. This is actually making people all the more not want to go and get vaccinated because it doesn't even work. Just in my opinion. Like, when you read an article like that, Jed, are you, like, freaked out that you need to go and get the measles vaccine?
No, because it's the measles, and it's not, you know, it's so specific, too, and it's so rare when it actually does do actual harm. And then you always read the story, and you find out, oh, it wasn't just the measles that took them on. They had already been suffering from another condition.
Right.
So you got to kind of question that, too.
Right. Okay, so speaking of, okay, let's move on to that next thing. So the Amazon is on fire. The Amazon rainforest that we've just been told about for decades and decades, you know, that we need to preserve because it assists in like 20% of, you know, the air that we're breathing, that it's producing 20%. But it's been burning for 3 weeks and it's like barely making a blip on the news. So, I mean, I told you about it today. Today is like the first time you heard about it, right? Because I barely heard about this yesterday.
Yeah, I just heard about this morning from you. And, yeah, like, of course, they're, you know, they're looking into it now. They're blaming who they can. They're already shoving the blame towards the deniers. Yeah, it's just kind of going down. It's kind of going down the usual pipeline of blame from the media. So it's like the same. It's like the usual suspects, and it doesn't matter what the case is. It's gonna find its way down to Trump eventually. Eventually, later, give it a few hours. I think they'll find a way to blame Trump for the fires in South America.
Yeah, because he wanted to pull out from like the Paris climate change thing, right? So, yeah. I'm just curious, like, whatever happened to the sun that was in control of our climate? Like, what is the deal? What are your thoughts here on climate change? And do you want to talk about, is there a difference between climate change and global warming? I obviously have a lot of thoughts on the climate change thing. You have celebrities that are suddenly turned activists. Environmentalist organizations, you've got the government, the UN, all these entities, and even the Vatican that supports the theory that human beings can cause climate change. So I know a lot of this started, too, with Al Gore. He was warning about the global warming. Then it became global cooling and then the mini ice age and then now it's climate change, and now they're actually dubbing it climate emergency. And then they also want to sit back and be like, I wonder why all of these people don't trust us.
Yeah.
But it just seems to me like the more and more I look into this climate change thing, it just seems to be one of the greater cons that was ever foisted upon mankind, right? Is just this global warming, climate change, carbon dioxide emissions hysteria. But then again, we have to thank Al Gore for at least inventing the internet, or else none of us could even look up this stuff.
Right. Yeah, take the good with the bad in all things.
So in all of what I'm looking up, they're saying that there is one question that none of these scientists can answer, none of these celebrities. They just don't know what to say when you ask them this. And the question is, what is the ideal global mean surface temperature? Because they're always talking about how, like, it's too hot, it's too cold. So what is the ideal mean surface temperature? And then they don't have an answer for that. So how can they also say that one thing is to, you know what I mean? Anyway, sorry, I'll let you go ahead and chat right now because my mind's going to go all over the place.
No, that's fine. Yeah, that is, you know, and that's a fair question. When someone says it's too hot, and then you know, naturally you look at them and you say, okay, well, how hot is this? You know, and you're staying around the house and you start to feel warm.
Mm-hmm.
When you see the temperature, and then you find out, well, what can I set the temperature down to for an optimal level? And everyone's got a difference. I think the average is anywhere between 68 degrees and 75 degrees.
Right.
What people want their homes to be set at. So that's kind of all we're kind of asking for. No one can say. And yes, I get it. Each region is different when it comes to that. So, but when you break the planet down in regions, you try to find out, okay, well, what's the average temperature? It's actually coming out now that in most areas, the climate actually doesn't change. In most areas of the face of the Earth, the literal face of the Earth, temperature does not change.
Yeah.
Now, when they pick extreme zones, when they pick zones like...
Oh, wait. Does Ellie need something? Sorry, I can't concentrate as a mom because she's like... I don't know if she's like crying because she needs something or if that's... She's like...
I'm going to try hugging her for a sec and see if she's... she just seems to need attention right now.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, that's all kids do. All kids definitely do. So...
Yeah, so what I found out is that they are cherry picking extreme temperature zones, mainly zones around the equator, zones that are already prone to heavy changes throughout the year. It comes up. So it's hard to. So, but when they take a more global base, or they take a wider area of where to look on the planet, temperature doesn't change that much. And in fact, when they were doing CO2 studies in the Earth, there's a reason why they'll only go back a couple hundred thousand years when they study the CO2 levels, because that's what they're attributing to climate change.
Right.
But when you go back millions of years, you find out that temperatures around the planet have been a lot more CO2 concentrated, like millions of years ago, and this is without humans, without industry, without, you know, CO2 impact that they say we've been causing, we're the main cause of. So I guess you have to ask, well, did the dinosaurs go through an industrial age? Because it seems to me that we have, you know, we're not even producing as much as the planet was by itself all those years ago, right? So when you, given the very fine scope they used to pick out these numbers, it becomes less and less convincing that climate change is happening at all. And now that's not to say that I don't believe it's not happening at all. I'm just saying, do a broader study, please, and then show me those numbers, and let's look at it fairly. Let's look at it from an actual global scale and not just from cherry-picked little points in the Earth where they feel like, oh, well, these numbers look better for us, so we're just going to focus on these numbers versus these numbers right next to them, which aren't producing as much change as we'd like to see.
Right. Well, I think that, we're having – so there's some people that are obviously of the belief that the Earth is only thousands of years old. Some believe that it's in the millions. You seem to believe that it's in the millions. Is that what I'm gathering, what you just said?
Whoever's doing the study seems to believe it's in the millions. I am – I wasn't there, so
– Yeah, so we're just going – we're right now going based off of, like, what you're reading through and the difference of global warming and climate change.
Yeah, it's only fair to go by what we can see versus what people's face may tell them. I mean, there's something measurable on both ends. But I'm just working on what the geologists and what the climatologists, if that even really is a word.
Yeah, because we have to break down. You're right. We have to break down the hoax to begin with and what they're saying is happening. So that's kind of like from the angle we're looking at it with. I mean, this, you guys, this is, by the way, not really so much a hill that I'm going to be dying on, let's just say. But it is fascinating, and the reason I want to talk about it is because it is one of the agendas that is constantly being pushed on us, and it billions of dollars are going towards climate change and the studies on climate change. And me personally, I just feel like the psychopaths that are in charge are going to come up with whatever con game they can to intimidate the masses with, and that's kind of where I'm coming from. So I'm also going to be biased coming from that angle. But I just feel like it's one of their goals. And the real problem is that we haven't categorized being psychotic as an immediate threat to the society like we do with I don't know, right?
Anything else,
yeah. And all of these people who fall into this like narcissistic psychopathic spectrum should just be barred from all positions in government, education, media, banking, religion. That's never going to happen. That's just a wild dream that I have. But then, Jed, you were telling me that, and I liked your perspective on this one, it is only those kind of jobs and positions only attract the narcissistic psychopaths, right?
Yeah, of course. Anything, honestly, anything in media, anything in politics, it is going to be populated by narcissists, and there's a good reason for that. It's more of an evolutionary reason. These are the egos that can take it. Normal, well, I don't say normal. I mean, you know,
because normal's right. What
the hell is normal? We're just talking about averages. The average human mind, the middle mind, does not tend to want the attention. Does not tend to need it. That's why you'll notice. It's no surprise that a lot of these actors and celebrities, comedians, have very, very traumatic childhoods, or very neglectful childhoods. These were seekers of attention, and they were, you know, these poor kids. I mean, even in the industry, just not even 20 years ago, kids in the industry are even heavily abused. So I'm talking about media. Sorry. But when we get to that mindset of politics and anyone who wants to be in the spotlight, it takes a kind of ego to survive the bashing. When you are part of the public discourse, that's essentially what you have to prepare yourself to take, criticism.
Yeah.
Because being part of the public discourse naturally means you are sharing your ideas, you are expressing your ideas, you're expressing your art form in terms of actors and celebrities. And you are open, you're letting yourself open for criticism. And the criticism is important because the criticism will determine whether people continue watching you or not. So for as much as these people complain about people being mean to them, I'm not sure when they missed that memo, but that is all part of the game. That is the game. The game is attention. The game is popularity. It's high school taken to that next level. You're just in a different clique, but you're still trying to gain the votes come prom time or Oscars or...
The Oscar time, speaking of which, yeah,
so,
that's true.
It's the adult prom for the Actors Guild. And, you know, but that's what these positions attract. Life in front of the camera means... you have to have a certain level of narcissism to survive. You need it to survive the game. You can't. It's not a bad thing to have, and that's what people kind of need. I think that's what more people need to wrap their minds around. And just kind of have to accept that it is a natural survival mechanism for living it out in the public eye.
Yes, and with everything, there's going to be the extreme. So when you're a psychopath narcissist, that's the extreme of it all. But you literally don't care what anybody else thinks. Like, it's one thing to be a leader and, like, you don't care about the opinions of sheep. We've all seen that kind of meme, right? Like, the lion never concerns himself with the opinions of sheep. But then it's one thing to be a true, like, control-needing psychopath who has power, because then you have the power, and then that's, like, where it's obviously scary. So anyways, I'm, like, going back now towards this whole Amazon thing and what the deal is with these celebrities. You have these summits that they go to, right? This is why they're being mocked and made fun of, because you also can't be going on camera talking about climate change and our carbon footprint and then getting into your jet, your private jet, to go to these kind of events, or, like, that's your means of travel.
That's exactly correct. I mean, how do you expect people to follow a hypocrite, in a sense? You know, so, and I think it's even worse that they almost never, you know, I would be even more granted to at least buy into some of the BS if they themselves admitted, hey, I'm not the best example, right? But I'm doing what little I can, you know, and I think that was the point of protecting the environment.
Right.
Because really and truly, the kind of, you almost have to examine, like, well, what is the fight of environmentalism? Are they fighting so that nature and humans are on equal grounds at all times? Because that would be a logistical nightmare. Are they fighting that we are just not removing more forest than we can grow back? Because that's certainly not happening in a lot of cases. If we go through like certain levels of deforestation, we do want to replant. We have the means to replant more than we can tear down. I mean, I don't know about you, but you know that there's that show Axeman or Axemen on History Network.
Okay.
And there's still a lot to go in terms of cutting down forests, but we're not anywhere near the kind of, you know, Mad Max desert-like world that everybody's fearing when the forests go. So, why? Like, what are they looking for? What are they looking towards? And if you think about it, it is the ultimate type of control freak situation. I mean, constantly monitoring the balance between humanity and nature. It's a never-ending struggle. You don't even have to look at a forest. You can look at the ocean life. You can look at the coral reefs. There's so many different ways that humans can overtake nature on some kind of level. I mean, until we're facing off literal mountains, are we going to be causing some sort of imbalance? You know, but that is, I kind of thought that was the point. And not to sound mean against nature, but nature's kind of there for us. Yes, we're supposed to be the garden. We're supposed to be the tenders of the garden. Who's calling those shots? You know, certainly not people who are flying around in G5s, charging the current. Like, so at least show me a failing. But really, at the end of the day, again, I hate to sound mean to the environment, but who the hell has time for the environment right now? Who's got time to solve, you know, to, and yeah, it sounds a bit selfish. I mean, it sounds really selfish right now.
Right.
But after this call, what are you going to do? What are you doing? For those listening who really, really, really care about the environment, what are you doing? Like, what's happening?
It is one thing to, like, okay, don't throw your plastic into the ocean. Don't litter, like, make sure you recycle. Like, those things, obviously, we're all agreeing on. Like, we're not saying, like, okay, everybody needs to stop and just plastic everything. That's clearly not what we're saying. We're just pointing out the one thing that is for certain in this is that there will always be those in power who are going to exploit this issue for their own gain. That part you can rely on 100%. They're actually doing it right now with carbon taxes, carbon trading. And then there's another narrative that as I'm reading up on this, that a lot of people with the climate change don't really want to mention. Because to them, they'll admit that 1,500 years ago, Canada and much of Northern Europe and Asia were under these ice caps that were like miles thick, okay? If you can try to imagine that. That's what they say, all right? Then the period of, what do you call it, deglaciation. Then these periods begin, and then the ice melts relatively quickly over the next few thousands of years for whatever unknown reason they can't come up with. And then the ocean levels were rising considerably. Okay, that's like pretty much to where we're having the map today. We're still in that deglaciation period, according to them, but compared to our short lifetimes, these things are not going to move as slowly, so they're going to be really hard to see. It's just kind of like watch the hands on a clock for 10 seconds and see if you could spot the hour hand moving. It's that same idea. And then the other thing that they're not telling you is that permanent ice of any kind is not the norm for this planet. Because most of Earth's history, there was no permanent ice anywhere. Ice ages are the exception, but they're not the rule. So because the Earth does not have permanent ice, we're always in a relatively unusual period, like right now, a period of deglaciation. Have you looked into that and that theory and that concept?
It's been a while, but I have. And I know we are constantly moving in and out of ice ages. I think we are at the tail end of an ice age at this point. So, you know, and then we took a break from it for a bit, so we're kind of coming back into it. So the ice age kind of never really ended. We're just kind of on a weird little run of it.
Yeah.
So, but here we're talking about geological scale. And that's something that is never really taken into account when we're given these climate change things. Again, do I accept that climate change is happening? I'm not 100% because neither is the consensus. You know, I mean, you're saying that the scientific consensus is that we are causing change, and that may be, but I still need to know how much.
Well, if the climate is changing, the climate is changing. That part's obvious. That part we're not denying. But is there anything and any kind of amount of money that we can give towards whoever wants to take on this job, which are the people that are in this treaty of climate change, is there any amount, dollar amount, that we can give to them that's going to solve what they're deeming is one big problem or crisis?
Well, I think the more important question is what are solutions? Before we start handing our money away, what the hell are they coming up with that's going to actually fix the climate? Because they're just talking about plastic straws and paper bags, and those are their main solutions. We're in a lot of trouble if that's the case. If we're talking about solutions that are going to fix things in the next 12 years, yeah, paper straws and plastic bags aren't going to cut it. So, you know, what is it going to take? And on top of that, where is the evidence that it's actually going to lead towards a better society, not have even bigger fallouts? You know, I get worried when government comes in to fix problems because that's not really their forte. I'm trying to remember the last problem government actually solved on its own with whatever plans that they put forward with taxpayer money.
That like actually worked and wasn't like one big sweeping failure.
It's strange. I really don't know what it's like. The same thing with the UN. You know, when people say that, you know, the world needs to come together. We need to. It's like, well, what's the last good thing the UN did? You know, that was multiple governments coming together and trying to figure out, you know, how to solve how to solve world problems.
And they still can't. They have spent more money. They like came up with the number, right, decades ago on how many billions it would cost to end world hunger. And then you have these articles that are coming out going, they've literally spent 50 times that on just their program. So what the heck? Do they really want to end world hunger? Of course not. Of course they don't want to end world hunger. So that's the part where it's like, it's just tricky because I guess there's only so much caring you can do. It's like admitting to the fact that, wow, we're overpopulated, because these same people want to be like, there's too many people in the world, or in the world, we're way too populated, we need to decrease that number by about 10%, just to quote Bill Gates. If we can decrease that number by 10 to 15%, so they all think that we're overpopulated, but then you have large parts of the world that are pretty empty where anybody can go. So what they're saying is we're pretty populated in all these big cities. That's an obvious. Like, that's a complete given. But you guys, hundreds of millions and now approaching billions of dollars spent for climate change. And then you got Bill Gates working with Harvard Research to modify the weather, to try to have efforts to dim out the sun, to block the sun, to help with climate change. And it's just, how can you trust them, you know? Like, how can you trust what they're doing?
Yeah, and again, you know, there's no real solutions. There's no actual viable solutions that they can put on paper and say, this is why it will work. This is why we need to sap trillions of dollars more in the next, you know, for the next 10 years of your money, of your tax money, to fix this problem that we can't even define in a lot of places and that we can't even study right. So, and on top of that, you know, hey, had it been like a private company that came out of the woodworks and said, we have the solution, I'm more inclined to trust a private company I've almost never heard of.
Right.
To trust that kind of government solution that you come up with at this point, because it'd be the same thing, you know. But at least this time, you know, I just have that knowledge that it's not the government, which means the company already has a better track record. So, I don't get it. I really kind of scratched my head. I thought we were kind of credited for being like an adaptive, adaptive species. So if we can fix something, then if we need to fix something, if something's really off balance and causing that much distress, you know, we'll get to it. But right now, it just seems like none of the models have come to fruition that all these people projected. They're still claiming, well, you know, all this change is happening all around us. They're blaming all these hurricanes on the climate change nonsense, and then it turns out that we get the exact same amount of hurricanes we've been getting since these predictions were made. Nothing's really been scaled up, so it's confusing. It's very confusing for me to listen to, and I do. I make it a point to listen to something new because, hey, maybe someone will have figured something out, but then there's always an opposing viewpoint that kind of debunks what I've just been told, so... Yeah, and the oceans and the ice caps, for the most part, are still here, and we're getting more of them as time goes by. So, I can't deal with the scare tactics anymore.
I know, I'm over it too. I've been because I heard from on the other end the people that are totally denying all of it. Together, they're just like, F that, you know, because I do believe that clearly things are changing, climates do change, but do I necessarily believe that it's because of human beings? No. But what are your thoughts on this, that the planet is not some pristine place that human beings are ruining, wrecking, destroying? The planet is and always has been a very hostile environment that humans have increasingly made more livable. Like, do you believe that the planet on its own, without any of us here, is a pretty hostile environment? I guess it depends on where on the planet you are at, actually. But
well, not even that. It really, you could literally be standing 20 feet from where you are at any given point in time, and you will be in a worse place. You know, if you're just standing in your house, like, let's just take your front door. Stand outside your front door for half a day with, you know, with just whatever resources you've got. Like, it's the outside is kind of cruel. It's not the friendliest of places.
No, I love that. I do love that you mentioned that, because look, we're living in a desert, right? Okay.
Yeah.
If none of this was here, like, we're living in a place right now, it's 100-something out, it's literally the desert, what have humans done to this place? I get it, it's Sin City, okay, they've done some bad stuff to this place, but the fact that you have millions of people living in a town, we've got air conditioning, like, houses came up, we have groceries, we have farms, like, people have you seen that, people, like, in North Vegas, if you go past North Vegas, they actually have, like, cattle. It's crazy. Like, they have, I mean, they've made what was just this desert a livable place, really. Because other than that, if I had to just be thrown into some random part on the planet and end up here and there was nothing here, I'd probably die. I know I'm not giving myself enough credit there, but I'd probably die.
Outside. And being outside for too long, dangerous. Even if you're outside in a city, if you're just meant to, you know, if you just had to, like, get by without an actual shelter to come back to, the outside is a pretty vicious place. So no, I don't. You're right. We have to. Humans had to make Earth livable for humans, and they had to adapt to. Well, not so much adapt. Because we're not adapting to the outside environment. We're living inside. You know, we just made a shield for ourselves
right. From
the outside. So even just adapting to the normal weather, we're not used to. I mean, everyone is complaining about, oh, the temperature's this, temperature's that. Like, I don't know. I'm sitting at, you know, 75 degrees right now. It's like I've created my artificial environment. And for the majority of people living in the modern age, civilized countries. It's like 72 to 75. That's the average temperature of the world as far as they're concerned.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. It's the ideal temperature. It's the one that scares the most people, but it also extorts the most money. You can't even have, like, 10 people come over to my house right now. We will not all agree on the temperature in my house right now. I think it feels perfect. But, you know, some people will come over and be like, it's kind of hot. And I'm going, this is great. Like, this feels great. But so you just, how are you going to, this is the thing. It's like they can't even give us the number that is the ideal temperature. Like, some people in Florida right now or Texas might think that that's way too hot. And I'd be like, well, I'm kind of okay with it. Like, I'm okay with a little bit of, like, the warmth and the humidity and, you know.
Yeah.
I find like certain temperatures way too cold. Like the temperatures that are in all these hotels, I'm freezing. Like I get into there and I'm freezing. My fingers and my toes don't stay warm enough. Like they're always pretty cold. Like just ask my husband.
Yeah.
I would be freezing. But everybody else is like sweating bullets and like it could be colder, you know? So.
Yeah, and I think that seems. I guess that seems to be the point, right? For the most part, we focus more time, and this is why we can't really care about the environment. We're more focused on our artificial environment. We're more focused on making our artificial environment more comfortable, our furniture, or the size of our homes, the, you know, the living space. That's what human beings are generally concerned over. So, you know, all this talk about making the outside more comfortable, why? You can't fight that for the most part. Like, you can make the outside as comfortable as possible, and all of a sudden it just rains, and that's natural.
Right, exactly. It's going to constantly change at predictions and models are all going to fail us, but these gullible masses are going to forget last week's lies. They don't even notice that they're being, it's like onto a new scam this week, onto a new scam. So it's this Green New Deal. I mean, they're also dubbing it the Green New Steal. The Green New Steal. They're stealing your freedom, your money, your country, your home, your offspring, your sanity, your safety, ultimately your life. Over like instilling fear in you that, you know, because I do believe that humans do impact the planet's ecology. Like there's no question there. And so does population growth. That's going to impact us in one way or another. It's just that the climate change, it's just not one of those impacts to me. Like real pollution is impactful, you know, loss of animal habitat, that's impactful. We can see those impacts, though, without resorting to supercomputers and climate forecasting modules of, you know, that don't work, and they're filled with, like, high risks of being wrong. Oh, the show, the radio show part's going to be over here, so I'm going to be jumping and sticking to the live, you guys. Tune in tomorrow.